What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
I'm in my drop top, cruising the streets.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily.
Presented by Mokarem Injury Lawyers.
Mokarem Injury Lawyers, baby. Hard as hell to say. Easy to dial. 281-222-2222. If you or a loved one is ever injured in an accident, you know who to call. And fellas and ladies over at Mokarem Injury Lawyers. Also, a little programming note here. Right in the middle of training camp, cut date, a little over a week away. Texans made a trade today. Nick Caserio, he is joining Payne and Pendergast tomorrow morning at 7:30. So training camp, cut date right on the corner, trade, final preseason game. Lot to be discussed and cussed and questions that need to be asked. And Seth and Sean definitely get that done with the Texans general manager tomorrow at 7:30. Set your reminders tomorrow at 7:30. Now, also, if you're listening on Twitch and YouTube, we greatly appreciate it. Tip my cap. Thank you for doing that. If you're listening on the AM/FM dial, either or, greatly appreciate that as well. But I want to encourage everybody to download the Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download the Odyssey app and keep us on your hip. You got access to all the podcasts. You got access to all the segments individually throughout the day that are podcasted. You also have access to live streaming, obviously, but the rewind feature there. If you miss something, you can always go back and find it right there. And keep us on your hip anywhere we go. I use the Odyssey app this morning, listening to In the Loop while I was getting a good little jog in, which I'm regretting right now because I got a left glute problem and a right calf problem. But nonetheless, I was able to use the Odyssey app and listen to those guys. So A-U-D-A-C-Y. Also, here at the end of this hour, 4:40, we will have D'Amico Ryans in full right here on Sports Radio 610 for you on this Reaction Monday. There's a walkthrough that's going on right now. I think it was scheduled for 3:30. And we will have the coach in full directly off the practice field. Albeit a walkthrough directly off the practice field. Again, following the John Metchie trade and preseason game two, after being able to watch the film and all that good stuff. And D'Amico Ryans, 4:40, right here on The Drive. And speaking of Saturday's game, it is a Reaction Monday, and I usually like to dedicate Dirty's Daily on a Reaction Monday during football season to what exactly I saw in this game that I think is worthy of discussion. And going into the game, I told B. Scott on Friday, what I want is to see – all of these guys that we're going to see in a Texans uniform for the first time, I want to see what they bring to the table. I want to see what they offer. I want to see, as a fan, what we've got to look forward to, right? The starters played. C.J. Stroud played two series. The first series didn't go so well. He missed Nico Collins on a go route. I have no concerns. Zero concerns about that, Luke. I'm not worried about it. I mean, CJ's going to hit that. If he throws it nine more times, him and Nico are going to complete it, and Nico's going to hit his head on the goalpost. Not worried about that at all. The next drive was a scoring drive that consisted, again, of some run, some mid-range pass game, some of the screen game to Nico, and it ultimately was a quick game throw to Nico for a touchdown on the right front pylon. And so a lot of good, right? A lot of good. But I like to get specific, Luke. I like to get real specific. The offensive line looked good, got a lot of push. If you look at Nick Chubb's numbers. Nick Chubb was had five rushes, 25 yards, long of nine, and Nick looked good. But I want to narrow this thing down to two guys, and they're two of the guys that we've not seen in a Texans uniform before. And that is Jake Andrews, the center, and Ed Ingram, the right guard. And see, the Texans have a right guard problem because Titus Howard is having to play right tackle with the Cam Robinson injury, which appears to be worse than maybe we thought. And to be honest with you, I don't know that Ariante Ursary hadn't played his way into being a left tackle anyway. So we've got a right guard problem. And to think that that right guard problem has presented an opportunity for Ed Ingram to line up next to Jake Andrews, and the first time we see extended play, I know he played a little bit last week, but really this week is when it really jumped off the screen for me, was there was serious push by this offensive line, reestablishing the offensive line, the line of scrimmage, I'm sorry. And to me, as I'm watching it, it all started right there at that center right guard position. Two new Texans that I think have probably earned starting jobs at this point, and Ed Ingram and Jake Andrews. That was good to see, man. Because I'm watching those guys thinking, okay, what do you got? And so I'm specifically watching them, and damn near every run play, they're getting pretty significant push up front, which is exactly what you didn't get, you know, several years, to be honest with you, but damn sure last year you didn't get it. So it was good to see that.
Yeah.
Ed Ingram, Jake Andrews for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think, you know, I said it earlier, but I think fit is always the most important thing in life in all aspects, professionally, personally, where you live, relationship, all that sort of stuff. And so I think for these two guys specifically, that's what's made it work here is that fit. And there was that connection for Andrews with the whole New England connection. But, you know, like a couple of castaways where Ed Ingram was a high draft pick and a big investment for the Vikings, and they were willing to move on from him because it didn't work there. But you bring them here, and they just seem to be good fits with what you're trying to do in this system, which is why you brought him here to begin with. Ed Ingram's a much better run blocker than pass blocker. He's better moving forward and pushing guys and being physical than having a backpedal. And so it's played out well so far. Now, of course, with all of this rhetoric, we have to, you know, put the asterisk for preseason. But yeah, so far so good. And Saturday was the latest example where both those guys, really everyone on the offensive line, did their part Saturday, and it looked good early on.
Yeah, look, I mean, look, Luke, we'll, when it's Simmons and Sweat in Tennessee, you know, we'll see what that looks like. But I'm going to take my little wins when I can get them. And I know right now this is Ed Ingram and Jake Andrews, you know, appearing to want to play physical and be willing to play physical is a step in the right direction. Now, also mention Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb, I don't know exactly what's going to happen here. But when I look at D'Amico Ryans and how it's clear that he wants to play great defense, they want to run the football, they want to protect the football, they want to stay ahead of the chains, they want to be super physical on the offensive side of the football. It's more about physicality and less about finesse. I can't help but watch Nick Chubb and the whole a bowling ball's hard to tackle, a down, you know, running downhill between the tackle. His style, although there's not a whole lot of highlight reel there, his style fits exactly what I think D'Amico wants. And for him to go out and get 5 for 25, long of nine, and look like Nick Chubb, now I don't know what level of explosiveness is going to be there when that opportunity presents itself. But Nick Chubb looked good as well behind that offensive line.
Yeah, he did. And the most important thing was, you know, just moving forward. And that's what he brings is not necessarily that explosiveness, but the physicality, which I think will be kind of what this Texans offense will be. I mean, eventually you hope that explosiveness comes from the offense in general, but it's always going to be about just pushing forward and staying ahead of the chains and those shorter gains, as we saw with a lot of the quick passing from Stroud or even in the first preseason game with Davis Mills as well leading things in that first unit. And that's really Chubb right now at this point in his career to a T of maybe doesn't have the explosiveness. D'Amico's even kind of talked about it, but he's still a tough runner. He's still a strong runner. And I know a lot of people said, hey, he looks a lot better in the games than he does in practice. And there's a lot of athletes like that who are more practice players or more game players. And so it was good to see Chubb after A little consternation in recent weeks of like, oh, what do we have here? What does he have left in the tank? Nice to see him run as effectively as he did on Saturday.
I'll be honest with you, Luke. I think I can lean into D'Amico's comments a little bit earlier. I think you may have mentioned him last week when you were on of D'Amico saying, hey, he's had some injuries and he's an older player. I've not seen anything in practice, in how he practices, or in that preseason game that tells me that he doesn't still have another gear that he can go get explosives. Maybe not hit his head on a goalpost explosive, mm-hmm. but can still, if you give him a crease, he's still going to go get a chunk play. I've not seen anything that tells me he does have it, and I've not seen anything that tells me that he doesn't. Right. So we'll see with the regular season. Ed Ingram, Jake Andrews in the middle of that offensive line, the push was obvious. It was good to see Nick Chubb running downhill. It just seems like it's playing into what D'Amico wants to be. The third thing here for me from the game, the Iowa State rookies, Noel and Higgins. Noel had an early return that was really good. Like it was a punt return. Higgins had a catch in that touchdown drive with C.J. Stroud there in that second drive of the game, second possession of the game. Both of those guys, I think, got extended play, got more snaps this week, or it seemed like they were on the field for more snaps this week than they were week one. So I think both of those guys, I think they showed up and to a certain extent showed out as well. We haven't talked enough about it, Luke, overall, I don't think. I know on the drive I haven't. The return game for the Texans seems like, I don't know if this happened by design or just kind of by happenstance, but when you look at, I'm talking about Jalen Noel, the rookie out of Iowa State, but when you look at the return game in general, there was also a nice little punt return by Braxton Berrios, I believe, early on as well. And then you just from watching practice, you know, hey, there's an emergency situation where your emergency guy is Christian Kirk, right? I mean, if you remember correctly, last year our emergency guy was Olhead. What was the Olhead receiver that was returning kicks and punts at the end of the season? Robert Ooh. Woods.
Oh, yeah.
Bobby
yeah.
Trees. Yeah. He's returning punts by the end of the season, right? I mean, this year you're going to have legitimate return specialists that can do it, both old and young, both in a reserve role as well. So I think the return game for the Texans this year has got a chance to be significantly better. But on that front, the Noel return early on, you know, the most impressive thing about Noel, and I've said this multiple times, whether it's in the offense or in the punt return game, he just looks like he belongs, right? It doesn't look like he's running scared. I mean, he's super controlled. He catches the punt. First of all, he runs up and catches the punt, doesn't let it hit the ground and bounce for 20 more yards. So he catches it, but then he's super patient in the middle of the field, kind of between the hashes. I don't know if he knew he was going to bounce it out or not, but then he bounces. He like draws them all in and then bounces it out wide and has the speed to turn the corner and go get that. I thought that him being able to contribute in the return game as well as a receiver that I think is just going to – the ball is just going to find him. Those two guys played well, and it was good to see them get somewhat of a start this week.
Yeah, I think preseason can always be misleading, so that's what I always look for with the young players is, do they look comfortable? Do they look like they belong? Is the game too fast for them, especially when you try to watch these young quarterbacks making their debuts in the preseason? And so, yeah, he certainly looks like he fits, had that nice return that unfortunately got brought back up with the penalty. But that's been all of the reports this whole training camp and preseason is, I keep hearing everyone just rave about him and not so much Higgins. It was nice to see Higgins have that catch in the out route Saturday, but it's always been about Noel. And man, he's just, every time he gets the ball, he looks good. He's making things happen. So he might be the one that is the bigger playmaker and the better option of the two rookies. And then on the return aspect, yeah, I think that's part of why Berrios, you bring him in to begin with, right? Yep. Braxton, because he helps with that area too.
Well, Braxton too, every time he gets on the damn field, he seems like the ball just finds him. Mm-hmm. The first preseason game, he scores a touchdown, had a catch earlier in that game, joint practice. He has a catch early in a 2-minute drive, and then he has a touchdown catch later in that scrimmage. It just seems like, you know, he's got, again, there's just a level of comfort. Maybe it's just the veteran that knows who he is, that's been in this offense before, that knows the offense, is just really comfortable with it. But it just looks different. The return game looks different. And those two rookies, again, I think Noel is going to be the more volume guy, the higher volume guy. And I think Higgins is going to be the big play guy that every other game reminds us, like, oh, y'all going to give Nico all that attention? Well, let me go get this one. I think he's got a real chance to be that guy. Now, my last takeaway from this is on the defensive side of the football. We've talked about this. Depth cover corners, right? You've got probably the best, if not one of the top two or three corner combos in all of football, in Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley Jr. Beyond that, the depth is unproven, young and unproven. And so going into every preseason game, you know these guys are going to play. And I think it's only right that we focus in on which one of these guys plays well, can handle the pressure of game day, can make the transition to the NFL, and which guy ultimately earns that, I would call it the third corner, reserve corner on this team. Jalen Smith out of USC, and I think Damon Arnett, the former first-round pick of the Raiders from 2020. I don't think he's played an NFL game since 2021. He was a UFL roughneck this year, and the Texans have given him a shot. But those are the two corners. Both of those guys had interceptions in this game, late in the game. I guess they were in the second half, weren't they? Was Smith in the first half, or was it in the second half? Smith, who did Smith get? It doesn't matter. It was a backup quarterback. It doesn't matter. Yeah. But both of those guys got interceptions. And, you know, I was talking with Sean Pendergast on the post game Saturday night, Luke, and I mean, obviously Smith being a third round pick, I mean, he's on the team. But Arnett, I thought, you know, this Arnett's got to be more of like a developmental, get back in here, let us pay you a good salary. And over a year, you show us you can take care of your body, you can show up on time, you can be an NFL football player. You can be disciplined and do those things, and you're not who you used to be. But if you look at just the sheer numbers, I mean, Arnett's got a chance to make this team. I don't know if he's ready. That may be absolute asinine, but there is an argument for a fourth corner to make this team, and especially if he's better on special teams than maybe some of the other guys. And, you know, so we'll see. I was looking at Arnett as more just a developmental kind of a project, maybe for next year. But as you start digging off into weeds, Arnett may be more of a factor this year. We'll see. Again, I think it's a long shot, but we'll see. But it's good to see those two depth corners making a few plays out there while they were at least when they did get their time. All right, we've got Astros updates galore. Astros updates galore. They are in Detroit tonight, but we've got updates on the most important injured. I guess we do have updates on all of them, but I ain't going to give them to you. I'm just going to give you the ones on the most important injured Astros. We'll do that next.
I'm always good raw dog in the drive.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
Ron Ugly is out. Luke Morrow is in. T Mills behind the glass on the ones and twos. And the Astros just somehow split a homestand. 1-3, lost 3. They won the series against the Red Sox and then turned around and lost the series to the Orioles. And what did I say earlier, Luke? They got outscored
44-17?
44-17 in that series and somehow won 3 of those games, boys. But
I like to just rip my nuts off.
Well, that's what Bryce would say. On to the next. On to the next. The Astros, they've got a game there in Detroit tonight. And here is the starting lineup. Jeremy Pena, shortstop, leading off. Carlos Correa, third base. In second, Jose Altuve in the 3-hole, playing second base. Jesus Sanchez, left field, batting fourth. Christian Walker, playing first base, batting fifth. Victor Caratini catching, batting sixth. Yainer Diaz, DH, batting seventh. Cam Smith in right field, batting eighth. And it's not Chaz McCormick. It is Jacob Melton, batting ninth in center field. Spencer Arrighetti on the bump. I know, Luke, you're still standing behind this. Spencer Arrighetti is the biggest key here. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in terms of the guys that are returning from injuries, he's the big one for you.
Yeah, for sure, because he had pitched earlier this year. Now, I was actually surprised with how well Javier pitched in his first appearance back, but then, you know, yesterday it's this illness, I guess, and hopefully that's what caused his velocity to be down yesterday as well. And he had to come out after 3 innings. So
You ain't lying. I mean, I never wish illness on anybody, but that is best case scenario.
Yeah, right? Velocity down, comes out after three innings. You're like, oh boy, this is not good. Second start back, and then we get the word that it's illness, or he just wasn't feeling well. Maybe the same thing as Jeremy Pena. So hopefully that's the case. But yeah, Eric Geddy would be that guy because he at least pitched earlier this year. And it's interesting because it sounds like such excuse making for Eric Geddy, but I don't think he's been as bad as you would think with the last his two starts since returning. I don't think he's pitched as poorly as it's looked or as the numbers indicate. I think there's still potential there or reasons to be hopeful for Eric Geddy the rest of the season. The 11 hits to the Marlins, like I think it was six of them were essentially infield hits last time out, just didn't have his best command. But that's not something that typically follows you start to start.
Be crazy, Luke, but when he came out of the game, had he given up more than one hit?
Against the Red Sox?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was like one hit, but like five walks, something like that.
Yeah,
right?
No, he definitely lost his command, but when he came out of the game, he'd only given up one hit, and that game was still reachable. And then all of a sudden, Dubin got in there, and before you could blink, it was he had given up five. And so, I agree with you. I don't think you get any pushback on this show, at least from on that thought of Spencer Eric Geddy and you know, the numbers will tell you significantly different than maybe what you believe had you watched. Yeah, I agree with you. Spencer Eric Geddy is talking about a guy coming back off of an injury. I mean, it's one of those deals where I think he's been fine in kind of a ramp-up role or knock-the-rust-off role or however you want to call it. No worries here with Spencer Eric Geddy. Now, it's got to get better with every start moving forward.
Yeah.
I mean, we're up against it here. I mean, we got to be under 40 games left in the season. So, I mean, he's looking at another, six, seven starts maybe. How many times you go through the rotation?
Yeah.
Five? Yeah, I mean, six, seven
That'd
starts.
Be, yeah, then, about seven more, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's got to get right sooner rather than later. But I think I'm optimistic. So, from an update standpoint with the Houston Astros, here's the big one. Josh Hader. I think some of you guys probably heard it over the weekend already, but we'll bring it to you anyway. According to Brian McTaggart, Josh Hader said it would take him 3 weeks to build up after not throwing for the next 3 weeks, so don't expect to see him in the regular season. Playoffs remain a possibility. 6 weeks, that's including the three-week dead period and 3 weeks to ramp up. We talked about it when they said 3 weeks off. He's like, well, there's going to be some kind of ramp-up period behind that. So not too shocking there that we're looking at possibly 6 weeks or more on the Josh Hader front.
Yeah, best case scenario is he returns just in time for October. But then even if that were to play out, and it's hard to see an Astros return from injury play out as smoothly as they expect, but even if it were to go that way, then you have your closer who hasn't pitched in 6 weeks, and now he will be pitching in ninth inning of playoff games, you know, even with that 3 week buildup. Still, you're just throwing him right back in there in a big spot in a playoff game, even though Hader's a veteran, he's pitching the playoffs, all that sort of stuff. It's different when you go 6 weeks not on a mound, a big league mound, and then you're just in there in a playoff game on the road. So even if, best case scenario, he's able to return for October, you have to temper expectations. They already said, you know, it wouldn't be extended outings. He couldn't go more than an inning, so you'd also have to be watching pitch count and different scenarios. So obviously it's far from ideal. And because of the Astros' history with injuries, I guess I'm just jaded. I don't expect to see him even in October. I think he's done for the 2025 season, which is a shame.
I hope you're dead ass wrong. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed here. Yordan Alvarez, here's another big one. Yordan Alvarez will begin a minor league rehab assignment Tuesday in Corpus. The plan is for him to play Tuesday, rest Wednesday, and then play back-to-back on Thursday. He could join the team in Baltimore because that's the team goes three in Detroit and then four in Baltimore. So that's looking at possibly a week from now, Yordan Alvarez being back in an Astros uniform playing in the big leagues. We'll see.
Yeah, I think best case scenario is a week from tomorrow. I know the Astros are floating out this idea, but if that's the case, he'll play tomorrow, as you said, take off Wednesday, play Thursday, Friday. I don't think they would have him then play Saturday because they have to see how he does with the back-to-back. So I think you sit him Saturday. So best case scenario is the finale Sunday in Baltimore, and you'd fly him up from Texas to Baltimore for that one game and then have him come back to Houston when you could just wait, give him a couple extra days, and have him rejoin the team for Tuesday here in Houston. So the Astros always put out these hopeful updates with all their injury returns, and then it usually doesn't pan out that way. I think more reasonably, if everything goes well, is a week from tomorrow when they start that home series with the Rockies. Hopefully, Yordan's in the lineup. We'll see how things go this week, but hasn't played in 3.5 months. Hasn't had any really live at-bats in an actual game during that time. He'll get 3 rehab games, and then we'll see what his timing's like, what he's like at the plate when he joins the big league club.
All right, 2 more guys that it would be nice to get in the fold here. There's updates on. GM Dana Brown said Luis Garcia would likely make 1 more rehab start, with Lance McCullers likely to join the rotation first. So, you know, those two guys, again, I think McCullers, as you said, made the statement that he appears to only want to be a starter. Maybe that's changed, maybe it hadn't, but I think Luis Garcia has some flexibility there, whether he's a guy that could help him out of the pen in that long middle relief role that they've had to depend on a couple of times recently, or he could be in a starting rotation. They could make this a six-man rotation. We'll see how they handle it. That's good news on those two guys front. Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers Jr. are close to returning to the Astros as well.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when McCullers comes back, which I guess might be this week, and then Garcia the week after. But, yeah, to your point, I guess you just have to throw him in there and turn it into a 6-man rotation. Like, who are you taking out right now? You can't take out Jason Alexander. He's been probably your best pitcher the last 2 weeks. And then, you know, I don't know if Arrigetti and Javier, if already you want to pull one of them out of the rotation. So, curious to see what they're going to do with this logjam when you're going to have about 7 starting pitchers in the big leagues if these guys, if and when they come back from injury.
Well, my bid goes to Luis Garcia being in the pen. He's come out of the pen. I don't know how it, you know, in terms of coming back from the injury that he had. I mean, does it set these guys back if they come out of the pen versus start? They know when they're going to pitch versus having to, you know, knee-jerk reaction type deal. I don't know that medical side of it, but I know if we're just talking arms, just talking stuff, Luis Garcia would be the one that I'd vote for. We'll see what happens. At least they got options, man. They got options and arms, and we'll see how that goes. All right, Texans head coach D'Amico Ryans. He's had time to watch the film from the game Saturday. They've had a walkthrough today in preparation to head to Detroit for a joint practice up there before next weekend's game. A couple more practices here this week, tomorrow and Wednesday. But D'Amico Ryans, your head coach, in full right here on Sports Radio 610. That is next.
I love D'Amico.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Ron Ugly is out. Luke Morrow is in. And guess what, y'all? Texans head coach D'Amico Ryans, he's at the podium. Sports Radio 610, when the head coach speaks, we bring it to you, baby. Here it is. D'Amico Ryans, Texans head coach.
After going back reviewing the game, what really stood out is just, you know, how we play complementary football. We play physical brand of football, the type of ball that I like to see us play. We're physical. We're flying around. Guys are having fun playing the game, and that's what I like to see.
Is there any concern with Ursary where he builds some momentum on the left side and he starts on the right side and potentially going back to the right?
I think Ursary in the game did a really good job where he was at left, and that's kind of the focus is wherever you line up. You just do the best with where you are. Really don't worry about guys having to move around or like just when you're called upon, like, can you go out and execute what's been asked of you, and can you do it at a consistently high level with high energy, high passion? And he's shown that over these first 2 preseason games.
Like Blake Fisher wasn't having the best camp, and he didn't have the best preseason game against the Minnesota Vikings. But on Saturday against Carolina, he looked, you know, after going back and watching some of the tape, he looked very, very good. Have you seen his confidence start to grow here in the last couple of weeks?
Blake did a really nice job this past game of, when you see him just, for me, sticking on blocks, hat on a hat, working his feet, like finishing blocks, that's how it should look. Right, so he has it in him. Blake just has to be consistent with what we're doing, consistently train, consistently finish every single rep, because physically he has all the tools that it takes to be able to do that. So this game here is representative of what he can do when he's dialed in and he's focused on the task and he goes after the job with the right mindset.
Well, what went into the decision to trade John Mechie for
Yeah, losing. I mean, trading Mechie is not easy to do. I really have a lot of love and affinity for Mechie, everything that he's been through in his professional career, the things that he had to battle through and push through and overcome. It's just very, you know, very fond of the guy. And he's an inspiration to myself, inspiration to a lot of people to see what he was able to go through, overcome, get back to playing football. Worked back his first 2 years in this camp. I thought Mechie has looked the best he's looked this camp. He's done a really nice job of preparing himself, putting himself in a really good spot, and he's done everything we asked, did everything the right way. It hurts to lose him, but I know he's going on to a really good opportunity there in Philly, and he'll continue to flourish, and he'll thrive in Philly because Mechie has the right mindset.
What does Harrison bring to the table for you guys at tight end?
Yeah, Harrison will see come in and compete. That's one thing. You know, he can run well. He competes at the line of scrimmage. So I'm excited to see, you know, what he does here over the next week.
What have you seen from Damon Arnett, not only on the field but off the field, the way he handles himself and appreciating this time and moment? And
Damon has been very thankful of the opportunity to be able to return to the NFL, and we're grateful to give him that opportunity. I think we all need that, you know, next chance. And to be able to give him that, he's taken it, he's ran with it, he's done some really nice things for us, not only in the game, you know, taking the football away, but also in practice. He's gotten better, getting back into the flow of how things are on this level. He has the physical tools needed to play corner and on this level, just has to keep improving on the technique and the small fundamental things that we're asking him to do. But he's done a really nice job, pleased with where he is.
A similar question to one that was asked earlier, but after that lineup has looked, the offensive line lineup that's played has looked really good. How do you approach it when you have somebody coming back from an injury like Cam Robinson?
We approach it one day at a time, one play at a time. We'll mix the guys up, throw them in there, but we'll see how Cam does as he works his way back this week. Just happy that he'll be back. You know, that's one thing about the injuries. You never know. You never know with everyone when it's your last snap, when a guy goes down on the field. So it's always a sensitive topic with the injuries and, you know, how hard it is for all of our guys and what they go through as players. So I'm happy to have Cam back on the field. However our lineup looks, it'll shape itself out.
You are listening to Texans head coach D'Amico Ryans on a Monday, his presser for our Reaction Monday, The Drive, Sterner and Hughley.
Mario has looked, you know, more comfortable with what we're asking him to do. I think second year in the scheme, he's done a really nice job. This is just playing more consistent. Like, he's just doing what's asked of him, not trying to do too much and be just a flash player, a splash player, and make. But he's making plays consistently just by doing things the right way. So he's playing physical. He's playing style versus the run, not just a explosive penetrator. But he's doing a great job versus double teams as well. So he's had a really nice camp, really solid camp, and he's put himself in a really good spot to have a great year.
What do you hope to see this week with the scrimmage with the Lions and then the game? Are you looking at the more emphasis on the guys that may be fighting for a position here, or just overall?
Yeah, excited this week. We get the opportunity to go up Detroit, practice against the Lions. We're excited about the opportunity. Good football team. And for us, it's just a matter of us just continuing to get better. Like, we get a chance to go against another different scheme, different players. Like, how do we respond versus this team? We know they are one of the top teams in the NFL last year. So just get a chance to go up and compete against a really nice team, good team, and see how do we show up. All right, so I'm excited to see how our players show up in Detroit.
How have you just kind of seen Jalen, Noel, and Jaden Higgins now that they've been around here for a couple months now? How have you just seen them kind of lean on each other?
You see those guys, they're always together. Jalen, JD, they're inseparable. And they're always working, doing extra things after practice. They're in constant communication, talking. Just two really good young rookie wide receivers that we're excited to see, you know, what they become. They have the mindset. They work the right way. They'll get better because they want to get better, and they know how to work at it. So I'm excited to see their growth process for both guys.
How important are reps for coaches in preseason games? I know Kaylee's kind of getting used to calling the game, all the logistics and everything. How important are those reps?
it's always important in preseason game and for, you know, first time play callers, you have to go through that process. You have to go through game day. Just, and training camp is reps for everyone. It's reps for players, it's reps for coaches. We have the officials in, it's reps for the officials. Everybody needs reps in training camp. So it's important to everybody. I think Kayla's done a really nice job the first 2 weeks of calling the plays, getting the plays in on time, just making sure he's dialed in with the quarterbacks. Everybody's been on the same page, so very pleased with where we are now. We've had a really seamless transition with him calling the plays. Guys know what to expect. Guy can operate fast in and out of the huddle, so I'm excited with where we are.
You last one player like Chris and Ryan. What are some
Oh, too late. You missed that question. Yeah, already answered it. Too late, buddy.
It was a quick question about the tape. It's more just so like games that you'd seen him in.
Yeah, just you see in Harrison, he made some plays versus us when he's with the Browns. He made a big play versus us. So you see a guy, he's very capable of making plays. We're excited to just add him to our roster, let him get in the room. We have a lot of good tight ends in there. We're excited to see him just pop in and compete.
That is D'Amico Ryans, Houston Texans head coach, fresh off the practice field. Today was a little bit more of a walkthrough. Trust me, I know. I showed up over there at 9 a.m. waiting for a practice. I thought we was going to practice, and I forgot they changed the schedule, Luke. Totally forgot about it. I pulled up, and I was like, damn, ain't nobody at practice today? I mean, ain't nobody here?
Everybody's sick.
And I realized, I was like, oops, I got that text, and I didn't slide it over into my schedule. So, needless to say, I've been in the city since about 8:30 this morning. I usually roll up to practice about 9:30. I don't need to watch the guys stretch. You know what I mean? I don't need to watch them go over the hurdles and all that kind of jive. But I eased in. It was about 8:30, man. I eased in through the city, pulled in the parking lot about 9:15. I wasn't in the parking lot. I was at the light right outside that entrance with the big bull and everything on it.
Yeah.
I looked over. I said, That looks a little light. And well, no practice today. Walked through at 3. That was D'Amico Ryans, fresh off the practice field. You heard him talking about the Mechie trade and how tough it was. Just speaks to the depth at the wide receiver position that they brought in here. I think that is why. I think the ultimately time had ran out on John Mechie, and they had to go out and bring some guys in here that they knew could play and would be better than Mechie. They did that. Mechie stepped up and played well, competed well. Put himself in a position where he could be traded, had that value. I think teams had seen that, and the Texans made that move. In fact, it is time for 5 o'clock fire, and we will start right there, Tyler. We'll start right there with John Mechie and the Texans trading the former second-round pick to the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll break that down and give you a little something on what they got in return. We'll do that next right here on Sports Radio 610.
Drive's busting this day open.
Busting what? The hell open, ain't it?
And we're telling them to bring it back.